to the splendor, the spectacle, the sparkling sensation, where the romance, the comedy, and the thrill of Disney fantasies come to electric life.
And as our friend Jiminy said, welcome. Welcome to the Disney Nerds Podcast, a place each week where like-minded people get together to discuss all things Disney. We'll help you get your Disney fix on. Here we go.
A Magic Kingdom proudly presents, in a million points of musical light, the magical worlds of Disney.
Hello and welcome to show number 120 of the Disney Nerds Podcast. Hey guys, how's it going? This is Ed, and welcome to our show. This week we have an extra special surprise. In the beginning, when we started the podcast, one of the things we were talking about was that we wanted to do everything about Disney. The parks, the movies, the history. Well, tonight's one of those history shows. What I have for tonight's show are a couple rare audio clips of Walt Disney giving interviews. Now, on the whole, for some of us that sounds really exciting. For some of us it's going to sound a little boring. But from these clips, I think what we're going to get a glimpse of what Walt's thoughts were about a number of different topics. What's also cool about these clips is they kind of catch Walt at different parts of his life and also as a different type of person. We see Walt as the salesman, we see Walt as the showman, and we also see Walt as the family man. Now, for the first clip, we're going to hear Walt in 1937 on what can best be described as a radio show. And it seems to be a weekly serial. We hear the host at the end asking her friends to come back the next week on Friday night. And the star coming back next week sounded pretty cool, too. So anyway, we're going to hear Walt. We're going to hear Donald Duck having his second birthday party, which kind of makes you sit back and take notice of this. He's 2 years old, so they're really pushing a very young character here. And one other thing to note is this is pre-Snow White, so he's going to talk about the movie in process. But Walt's fame has all been due to his shorts and the cartoons coming out of the Walt Disney Studios up till now. So nothing feature, and I think that's pretty cool how famous he is at this point.
Elsa Shalhart Reviews. Presenting from Hollywood, California, one of the nation's foremost motion picture previewers. Tonight she has as her guest the most famous and beloved creator of cartoons in the world of motion pictures. Five-time winner of Academy Awards, Walt Disney. Donald Duck and Madam Clara Cluck are here with him also. And by the way, tomorrow is Donald Duck's birthday, and we have a beautiful birthday cake here in the studio celebrating this momentous occasion. And now here is Elsa Shalhart.
Thank you, Ken Carpenter. Good evening, friends. Yes, yes, Donald. I know you're getting pretty anxious to cut your beautiful birthday cake. But first, I feel that we ought to congratulate Mr. Disney. You see, he won another Academy Award last week for his picture, The Country Cousin. Now, that's quite an honor, Donald. Besides, Donald, I want to whisper something to you, and this is very confidential. You know, your boss, Mr. Walt Disney, is really a wonderful artist. He's brought so much joy and beauty into the world through his creation. Of course, Donald. You've become a friend of everyone, too, children and grown-ups. I don't know how the ducks feel about you, though. But I guess they envy you because you always seem to have such much fun, you and Madam Clara Cluck. There goes your child. Well, Walt, it's wonderful to have you here. And to think that Donald is 2 years old.
Yes, he's certainly growing fast, Elsa. By the way, that's a beautiful birthday cake. Strictly speaking, Donald's birthday is tomorrow, and all the schools are going to be closed.
Tomorrow's Saturday.
Shh, don't say a word. He thinks it's for him.
Oh, yes. Well, Donald, you're a nice little fellow. Happy birthday to you, and I hope you have 100 more.
What are you going to do with a guy like that who sings happy birthday to himself?
Well, Walt, at least he's different.
Eat? Say, where are your manners?
Don't worry, Walt. You know, after all, he's only a baby.
Say, Donald, you're going to end up with no cake if you don't behave yourself.
Walt, maybe we better change the subject. He's always hungry. Well, I started to ask you, Walt. How is Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs coming along? There's a picture we're all anxiously awaiting.
Oh, it's come along very well. I believe we've made great strides in animation and color. We've developed a special process for color that gives us dimension.
Mm.
Depth.
You've been preparing for that for some time, haven't you?
Yes. We've been at it for the past 2 years.
Well, well. That puts you in the Good Earth class. 2 years or longer we're involved in making that picture, too.
Yes. Well, we won't be finished completely with Snow White until sometime early next year. You see, Elsa, it's going to run 10 reels, which means a showing time of 1.5 hours. No cartoon production has ever run that long before.
No, I should say not. 1.5 hours, that's a long while. Of course, you know, the idea of making Snow White into your type of creation and adding color to it, I think it's simply marvelous.
Well, it's a well-known fairy tale. Every country's familiar with it. That's why we feel justified in putting $1 million into it.
$1 million? That's a lot of money. That ought to be a good picture. Walt, your problems of production are just about 100 times more difficult to work out than those of a director on a picture, let's say, in which living actors appear.
Well, we have to create personalities out of line drawings.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if we were making Snow White with living actors, we could turn the story over to them, and each actor would introduce bits of business which would build up the character he was playing.
That's right.
But with our little characters, we have to plan out every movement that they make, even to the wink of the eye. In other words, we have to literally pull everything out of the air, and then with a pencil and paper, we start building a picture.
What patience that must take. You know, it makes me dizzy to think of the millions of drawings necessary for a production of this kind.
Some work is right. He ought to know. He gives us plenty of work.
Yes, I imagine so. Walt, I've always been fascinated by the types of men who are part of your group, that is, of your studio. They're unusually fine chaps, very young, intelligent. They all seem very idealistic. Just the sort of men who'd be creating with you this magical world that you've opened up for the millions of us.
Well, Elsa, our studio set up attracts men who have the same feeling for the business that we do. No one becomes a part of the group that isn't in sympathy with our ideals.
Oh, that's very nice. You're a very unique company, certainly. Entirely different from any other studio in Hollywood. We'll eat in just a minute, Donald.
Say, why don't you behave yourself? Look at Clara. She's nice and dignified.
Donald. Walt. I've always felt that you were a modern Hans Christian Andersen.
Oh, no. Andersen was the originator. We've only taken the memories of our childhood and recreated them for the screen.
And in fine form, too. But what about the creation of Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse? And our friend Donald and Madame Clara, Pluto and all the rest.
Oh, well, that's different. Who's blushing, fresh guy?
You know, one of the admirable things about your creations, your cartoons, is that you never show cruelty.
Well, that's the one thing that we've tried to avoid in recreating the fairy tales.
Uh-huh.
For instance, in the original, the three little pigs. Two of the little pigs were eaten up by the wolf. Then the wolf was eaten up by the third little pig. But when we made the story, we just had the wolf scare the two little pigs so that they ran to the third little pig's house for protection. Then when the wolf followed the little pigs, he fell down the chimney, and if you remember, a little heat was applied in the right spot, and the wolf went over the hill.
I do remember it. Walt, how many people do you have working at your studio?
500. 250 are working on Snow White, and the rest of them are working on the short subjects.
Say, that's an enormous studio staff. I had no idea you had so many artists. Incidentally, if it can be called incidentally, just what is an animator?
An animator is an artist who makes the drawings move. He puts them through their paces. He's a combination of many things. First, he has to be a real student of art. Next, he has to be a clever draftsman. Then he must have the soul of an actor and the understanding of a director.
Oh, not very much. He certainly can't be limited in any way.
No, he certainly cannot.
I'll bet, Donald, you're glad you're just a duck and not an animator. Be patient, Donald. Just a second. The cake won't run away. Walt, just one more question. What about the brownies? I mean the dwarfs in Snow White. Are they cute?
Sure you're cute when you're quiet. The brownies, I mean the dwarfs. Yes, Elsa, they are cute. We got 7 of them. Each a definite personality. One's called Grumpy. He's the woman hater. He doesn't want Snow White around the place because he knows she's going to bring trouble.
Woman, woman, woman.
Then there's Doc, the unofficial leader, very pompous. Then we have Bashful, who secretly falls in love with Snow White. And Happy, a very round, fat, and jolly little fellow. And then there's Sneezy, who has hay fever. And Sleepy, who always wakes up in time to solve some heavy problem. And we also have little Dopey. He's the one dwarf without a beard.
Yes, yes, yes.
Leave it to Donald. He knows. Now, Donald and Madam Clara, you've been very patient. And I think we'll ask Mr. Disney to light the candles on this beautiful cake, and then we're going to cut it.
I'm going.
But there's just one more thing. Patience, Donald. It's just that I want to talk to Madam Clara Cluck this time. Madam Clara, you're such a charming personality. Of course, Donald is too. But you've really been a very model guest. Now I wonder if you would honor us by singing a song. I know that it would make Donald's birthday quite complete. What's the matter with Donald? Listen, have I offended her, Walt? What's the matter with her?
Oh, she's just temperamental. Well, she says she doesn't want to sing on the same program with Donald Duck.
Oh, how silly. Why, Clara, you shouldn't feel that way. After all, Donald Duck is a great artist, too.
Wait a minute, Elsa. I'm used to handling temperamental animals. I'll take a hand here.
Okay.
Now, listen, Clara. Be a good girl. Stop being temperamental. It's old-fashioned. Mrs. Shallard has been kind to have us on her program. She's asked you to sing. Now, you don't want to be ungracious about it, do you? That's the girl. Wait a minute. We can't have this fighting. Be nice. Now, you two kiss and make up. That's fine. Now, I'll tell you what. Why don't you sing a duet?
What would you suggest, Madam Clara? Very nice.
Does she remind you of anyone?
Oh,
her feathers ruffle up on that, I know.
Hey, what's happening?
They're fighting.
Somebody separate them.
Back them.
Hey,
look out. Look out. The cake.
Oh, dear. Well, they still can eat it, even if it is all smashed. Well, cheer up, Donald, but you shouldn't fight. You ought to know better than that. You're a big boy. Anyway, I thank you for being here. You're very sweet, and I'm glad we celebrated our birthday with you. It's wonderful. I hope we'll celebrate many more, Donald. And, Madam Clara, I want to thank you for your lovely song. It was quite wonderful. Good night to you both. Some pair you have there, Walt. I want to say good night to you, too, and thank you for being with us. It was certainly a great joy and a privilege, and we had loads and loads of fun.
Good night, Elsa. And I hope you had as much fun as I did.
Oh, believe me, I think we all did. My friends, we'll be with you again next Friday night. Douglas Fairbanks, Jr., who recently came home from England after being over there for 3 years, is going to be our honor guest. And I know you'll enjoy hearing what Mr. Fairbanks has to say. Thank you, and good night, friends.
This next clip of Walt in an interview takes place, I'm guessing, in the 50s. Only because they kind of look back on the Snow White Fantasia time frame. This clip is also kind of cool in that Walt is pretty candid about the ups and downs money-wise he had at the studios from the big success from Snow White to about 2 years, 3 years later, actually having to put all the money back out to do the next couple features. So interesting to hear Walt talk about that. You also begin to hear some of Walt's philosophy about animation and how they're putting these stories together. So, another good listen.
How long was Snow White in production, Walt?
I actually started to plan the picture about 1935. And I fooled around with it, trying to get a hold of a story and things for a couple of years. And finally it began to gel. Then I went to work on it. And I finished it the fall of 1938. I didn't know what I had or what would happen or anything. We had the family fortune. We had everything wrapped up in Snow White. In fact, the banker, I think, was losing more sleep than I was. And fortunately, we put it in, premiered it, and everything else. Why, everything was fine. The banker was happy.
And the following spring, along came that Academy Award.
It wasn't but about 2 years later that I was almost broke.
Well... 2 years later was following Pinocchio and coming into the Fantasia period.
Yeah, that about did it, you know.
But that was a
artistic
new
artistic success, financial failure. You know?
Certainly an artistic success. It was a magnificent.
Well, some people would question that, too.
Mickey was certainly a mouse of all trades, and particularly impressive as a conductor.
Well, that's what started. I was doing this... Sorcerer's Apprentice with Mickey Mouse, and I happened to have dinner one night with Stokowski. And Stokowski said, oh, I would love to conduct that for you, you know? Well, that led to not only doing this one little short subject, but it got us involved where I did all of Fantasia, and before I knew it, I ended up spending $400,000 getting music with Stokowski.
Well, perfectionism always costs money, I guess. That's something you've always been after.
Well, I was always known as the perfectionist until I met Stokowski.
And you had a new member of the club, indeed. Yeah. Tell us, Walt, what are the principal technical advances in the animated cartoon since the time of Fantasia?
Better drawing. The first thing I did when I got a little money to experiment, I put all my artists back in school. The art schools that existed then... didn't quite have enough for what we needed. So we set up our own art school.
Well, you were inventing a new art anyway.
Well, yes, but we were just going a little bit beyond what they were getting in the art school where they work with the static figure. Now, we were dealing in motion, movement, and the flow of movement, the flow of things, you know, action, reaction, all of that. So we had to set up our own school. And out of that school have come the artists that now make up my staff here, and more than that, the artists that make up most all of the cartoon outfits in Hollywood.
Uh-huh.
Were directly or indirectly out of my school.
The next clip is really kind of cool because it touches on the last clip a little bit. Walt talked about the school for artists. Well, in this next clip, we're going to hear about how Bambi brought that on. They needed to get the artists and the animators retrained to draw more realistic animals and more specifically the human shape. So Walt basically had his artists go back to school to learn these things. And in the past, I've read a number of interviews where this has been mentioned. So this was something that the artists really appreciated and definitely used down the road as the Disney features continued.
Mr. Walt Disney.
We're here to talk about Bambi, the re-release of Bambi. I understand it took you 7 years to develop and produce Bambi. What did you see in the Bambi project to carry it through those 7 years? How come it took so long?
Well, actually, it was a change of pace for us from what we'd been doing. Snow White, Pinocchio, and the others were more the obvious cartoon type of characters. But with Bambi, there was a need for a subtlety in our animation, a need for more of a lifelike type of animation. And, there was a certain awe and respect we had of this classic of Bambi that I decided that, number one, I'd have to put my artist back in school to learn something that is something you don't get in the formal art education. And that is, you get human anatomy. And this was animal anatomy, and beyond that, animal locomotion, you know, movement and things. So I put him into school and had my artist specially trained for this one picture. Now, when I finally went into production, I just couldn't put every artist I had on it. So I had to take a select team, and that cut the size of the staff down to a point that it took longer. But I think the end result was worth that. Because in studying the animals, we brought deer in, brought them into the art classes, and let them munch hay and things to keep them quiet, and the artists were drawing the animals. But that wasn't enough. We had to see them more as they actually behaved in nature. And I found a naturalist photographer that had done some beautiful work out in the open country, and I made a deal with him to go and cover the action of these animals as they actually lived their life. And he went into the main country. He went into different parts of the country where he could find the animals and photographed them for me. And he caught them just living their life as nature intended.
You know, I counted them, and there are only 950 words of dialogue in Bambi. Why so few words in a feature motion picture?
Well, we thought we got a little gabby with it, to be frank. I mean, we were striving for fewer words to begin with because we wanted the action and the music to carry it more or less. And we finally ended up with 200 more words than we thought we would when we first started out that we wanted to have in it.
Isn't there a little bit of Bambi and Walt Disney, or for that matter, in everything you try to do?
Well, I don't know. I never thought of myself that way. I mean, I don't know who I'd be, Thumper or Flower or what, you know. But I think the thing might be that I'm a lover of nature. In fact, I respect nature very much. And I feel that through watching, observing the habits of the creatures of nature, man could learn a lot.
This next clip is Walt as the family man, but as the clip goes on, you see that the showman is always there too. It appears to be Walt and his family walking on a cruise ship, and a reporter happens upon them and begins to interview them. Now, after I listened a couple times, I wondered if perhaps this might have been a setup, that the interview was planned, but I'll let you judge. Here you go.
Let's walk around the deck a little. Oh, I see Walt Disney and his family. I hope we can get Mr. Disney if he's not too busy. Hello, Mr. Disney. Jack Mangan. Oh, how are you? Fine. And your family. Let's meet the whole family. Mr. Disney.
How are you?
Going to do some shopping?
Well, I don't know. We did quite a bit before we left.
And the youngest Disney?
Sharon.
And?
Diane Disney.
Diane. Oh, you're so beautiful. She's the oldest.
Thank you.
Pretty, yes. She's very beautiful.
Think she looks like her old man?
Yes. with a great resemblance to her mother, too. what are you going to do over in England, Miss Dizzy?
Especially I don't know.
Nothing. Just roam around, have a vacation, and enjoy life.
Well, I wonder if we might walk up a little closer to our camera so we can get a close-up shot and talk to you about Disney Incorporated, Disney cartoons and so forth.
Well, it's quite a racket.
Oh, it really is. It's a fabulous business today. And, you know, I was interested in finding out recently that I was always under the impression that you started with Mickey Mouse, but that's not true.
No, I started over 30 years ago.
Don't look at...
Well, I died a little bit.
You started with Oswald in the movies, didn't you?
Well, that came later. That was about 1927.
And then 28 came Mickey Mouse?
Mickey Mouse, yeah.
And since then, we don't have to worry about a thing.
No, that's 21 years of Mouse. He's an old Mouse for now.
How many characters do you put out now in different series?
Well, we have Donald Duck. I have a dog, Pluto.
Uh-huh.
And the Mouse. And occasionally I make... things, you know, with other odd characters, you know,
and
the Beetle Pigs.
Yeah, and now, of course, you're going into productions where you have part cartoon and part live actors.
Well, that's in England. I'm going to make this picture, Treasure Island.
This would be wonderful.
Yeah.
Will that be with Bobby Driscoll?
Yeah.
The little girl movie star. Oh, he's wonderful. He was so great in that last picture of yours.
The window, too. He did a wonderful job in the window.
Walter, I'd like to ask you, because I'm very naive, and most people are, about the characters, how you get them to animate. Is that a technical thing?
Well, we draw.
Mm-hmm. And then how do you keep them moving?
By making more drawings.
And you place them, they must have to be right within an eighth of an inch of one another.
Oh, sometimes a 64th of an inch, if they're moving slow, you see. If they're moving fast, well, we'll have them as far apart as an inch.
You know, Edgar Bergen's been running all over the ship looking for you.
Have
you seen him yet?
No, I'd like to see him.
We've been...
Is he sailing?
No, he's down especially to visit with you
and Charles Correll of Amos and Andy.
Oh, yeah.
He walked by here about three
Johnny
times.
Johnny Correll on the boat?
Yeah, he's going over, too. Oh, we have a wonderful list of there. Oh, great big bunch of people.
Well, I'd like to see it.
Well, I think we're almost running out of time, Walter. I want to thank you for being with us and tell our friends that right now we have to bring Ship's Reporter to a close. And so, friends, we come to the end of Ship's Reporter for today. Ship's Reporter is produced on film by the National Television Guild and directed by Chick Hinton. Until next time, then, this is Jack Mangan and Walt Disney wishing you smooth sailing.
Sorry for the quality of that last clip. I tried to clean it up, but I still felt it was really worth listening to, so I hope it didn't hurt too much. The next clip I have is going to be along the lines of something a little bit more funny. Basically, what I have is part of the Jack Benny show that Walt Disney starred in 1965. It's a really, really fun little skit they put on here that is great. Totally Jack Benny to the utmost. It's very cool, and it takes place in Walt's office. And yes, the office looks very familiar to those familiar with One Man's Dream. So here you go. Take a listen.
Walt Disney.
Well, I like them, but let's don't forget that darn cat. The title of the picture is the important thing. We got to punch it. Okay. Yeah?
Mr. Jack Benny is here to see you.
Jack Benny? Send him in. Wonder what he wants.
Well, I thought he was still mad at you for not using him in Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Finally got through to him. It was a cartoon. Oh, Jack.
Hi, Walt.
Good to see you.
Good Thank to see you. You. Thank you.
This is a real pleasant surprise, you know? You don't come around here very often.
No, what a beautiful studio you have here in this office and everything.
Well, I think after Mary Poppins, I can afford a redo.
Sit down. Esmeralda, be quiet.
I say it, Walt.
Everybody around here calls me Walt.
I know.
Jack, what's on your mind?
Well, Walt, you see, tomorrow I'm doing an hour television show with a large cast and crew. And I thought that instead of taking him to dinner after the show at the Bistro or Chasen's, that just for a change, I thought it'd be kind of nice if I took him through Disneyland. That is, if it's all right with you.
Oh, Jack, I think it's a wonderful idea. How many people are there?
110. That's not too many, is it?
No. In fact, we have a special department that handles large groups at a discount.
A discount?
Yeah, that means...
I know what it means! Look, Walt, I was thinking, you know, with a big show like mine, I wind up with practically nothing. 110 people. I mean, even with a discount. It would really run into... And since you see the fact that you own the place, I thought maybe...
Come on, Chang, behave yourself. Go ahead, Jack, pay no attention to him. We're all one big happy family. Whatever you can say to me, you can say in front of him.
Well, Walt, as I was saying...
One big family.
Shut up. Now, Walt, as I was saying... Nice pussycat. Walt, as I was saying, you see, 110... Oh, incidentally, did you ever get those four complimentary tickets I sent you to one of my television shows?
Oh, yes, Jack, thank you. You know, I almost forgotten that was about 9 years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, just about, yeah. Now, I was saying, I'm taking 110 people to Disneyland. And, Walt, I must tell you, I think it's just so wonderful the way you're always taking groups of poor, underprivileged children through Disneyland free of charge.
Well, Jack, we don't publicize that. How did you know?
My sister's kid went once. He had a wonderful time. He brought me back some candy and everything. Now, Walt, it's silly to keep beating around the bush. What I was wondering was...
Wait a minute, Jack. I think I'm getting the idea. You want 110 free tickets?
Well...
I had no idea that's what you wanted.
I didn't. I'm only a bird.
Certainly. Let's see here. Wait a minute, Jack. I seem to recall that when Disneyland first opened, I gave you a 14-carat solid gold pass, lifetime pass to Disneyland.
Yes, you did give me a solid gold pass.
Well, where is it?
Here. I had a roll of dollars.
Okay, 110 free tickets. And I hope you all have a wonderful time.
Yeah. Thanks, Walt. And listen, you've been so nice to me, I'm going to do something for you.
Yeah, what's that?
Well, you know how important it is when a motion picture is publicized on a television show.
Oh, yes, I certainly do.
Well, now look, on my show tomorrow night, I have a beautiful foreign actress. And we're going to do a foreign film. You know, like they do in Italy, an Italian film.
See? Yeah.
And I'm going to rewrite the whole thing so that it has a sort of a Walt Disney approach.
But Jack, I don't know how you can possibly apply my movie-making approach to a foreign film. I mean, everyone I see seems to be so earthy, so full of basic, raw emotions.
That's true, Walt, but don't worry about it. It'll work out.
Ah, but there's such short time. Won't it be a problem?
Not when you're as creative as I am.
He's living in the wonderful world of Benny.
Don't worry about a thing. It'll be great. And thanks so much for the tickets.
Always glad to help a friend in need, Jack. Goodbye.
Walt. I was just thinking. Now, see, my wife, Mary, she's not on my show, but she's never been to Disneyland. And I was just thinking.
My approach in an Italian movie? This we'll have to see, won't we, boy?
The next sound clip you're going to hear is something you're probably going to be familiar with. It's the Sherman Brothers singing It's a Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow when they then dance off the stage. Well, what's cool about this clip is that it continues on. And what we hear is Walt Disney as the ultimate businessman salesman. Basically, what this is a movie created for the GE executives to explain to them exactly what they paid for the World's Fair in the Carousel of Progress. So it's pretty cool hearing Walt not being Uncle Walt talking to the people, but Walt Disney, the businessman, talking to somebody who just paid him a lot of money to do something. Here we go.
There's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow shining at the end of every day. There's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow, and tomorrow's just a dream away. Man has a dream, and that's the start. He follows his dream with mind and heart. And when it becomes a reality, it's a dream come true for you and me. So there's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow shining at the end of every day. There's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow, just a dream away.
Well, it sounds pretty good. In fact, that's just the right spirit. Our songwriters, Dick and Bob Sherman of the Walt Disney Studio. The Sherman Brothers have written many of the wonderful songs for our motion pictures and television shows. And I think this song, written especially for you, captures the spirit of the General Electric Pavilion at the New York World's Fair. Thanks, boys.
Thanks, Walt.
Say goodbye to the folks.
Bye-bye.
There's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow.
As I said, that's the spirit. Well, a beautiful tomorrow, just a dream away. That says we're going places. There's progress ahead. And that's just the mood we want for the whole pavilion. The pavilion you will see next April is the result of the combined talents and creative ideas of many people. You have a wonderful building designed by Welton Beckett and Associates. The entire Disney team has been called on to develop entertaining and exciting attractions. The design talents of Wet Enterprises, all the special skills of our key personnel here at the Walt Disney Studio, and 8 years of experience in creating attractions and being a good host to nearly 40 million people at Disneyland. And your New York World's Fair staff has worked closely with us to assure that the overall theme and each individual area of the pavilion will accomplish General Electric's goals at the fair. We think you will be happy with the results. But more important, we think your guests will be excited about the entertainment, the exhibits, and especially about the General Electric Company. Why? Because what we're attempting to do is to create unique attractions for every part of your pavilion at the fair. Here, for example, is a scale model of the General Electric Carousel Theater, a theater in which the audience itself moves in their seats around the stages. The actors, well, they're not real people, but they are a talented and interesting cast. We call them audio animatronic figures, and they talk and act like human beings. The Carousel Theater will present a warm and entertaining portrayal of how life has changed through electrical energy. The same kind of exciting and unique entertainment is what we're planning for every area of the General Electric Pavilion. So, see you at the fair, and remember,
there's a great big beautiful tomorrow, shining at the end of every day. There's a great big beautiful tomorrow, just a dream away.
The next clip, and the last one for tonight, is kind of a sad one. Now, as you notice from the last clip, Walt does sound a little older, losing his breath a little bit and taking his time thinking out the thoughts. Well, this next clip is Walt's last interview before he passed away. This was done with a South African radio station who came out to Hollywood to interview him. So some of the questions are kind of biased toward getting Walt to come to South Africa. What I thought was really cool, and unfortunately for this reporter's sake, not too cool for him, was that he mentioned about how in the animation process, he assumed that you would dress up somebody to then be copied into the animation. Walt took a big exception to that statement, and you're going to hear him put the reporter straight. This clip is great in that Walt goes over the entire process of the animation, and he gives his philosophy, and he backs his animators up to the hilt. Awesome clip to hear. I hope you enjoy it.
And for the next half hour, we invite you to explore with us the world of Walt Disney, his films, and his music.
Leslie Stane of Johannesburg recently visited him in his studios in Hollywood and asked him first whether the success of Mary Poppins had inspired more musicals of that type.
Yes, I have a musical that will start production here in less than 2 months. It's a different type of musical than Mary Poppins. It's not a fantasy. It's more a story with music. It has to do with a real live person that actually existed and was a very respected man who lived in Philadelphia, and it's the story of his problems when his daughter was in the teenage, and it's a good family fun picture with emphasizing personalities and songs and things.
Who's taking the leading part?
Fred McMurray is playing the role of Anthony Drexel Biddle, who is known as the happiest millionaire. He was a millionaire that really made good use of his life. And then I'm bringing Tommy Steele from the New York play Half a Sixpence, who is playing one of the starring roles of the butler who moves into this house, becomes a very important part of the family. And I have two youngsters being introduced. They've been on television, but never in movies.
for the young girl, Cordelia, the daughter, I have Leslie Ann Warren, who's a very talented dancer, singer, and the juvenile lead is being carried by John Davidson, who's a newcomer, but he's a very talented boy, has a wonderful voice, sings well, and that's about the cast to that point.
And the music?
This will, point, I say.
And the music, will that be done by the Sherman Brothers again?
Oh, yes, they are. The Sherman Brothers, they're really a very important part of our organization here. They're wonderful. They go for the team play, you know. We work sort of, that's the way we work here, you know. It's a team that gets together and builds these things. And the Sherman Brothers are not only very talented, but very cooperative.
This is the Winnie the Pooh song. Deep in the 100-acre wood, where Christopher Robin plays, you'll find the enchanted neighborhood of Christopher's childhood days. A donkey named Eeyore is his friend, and Kanga and Little Roo. There's Rabbit, there's Piglet, and there's Owl, but most of all, Winnie the Pooh. Tubby little cubby all stuffed with fluff. He's Winnie the Pooh, Winnie the Pooh, willy-nilly silly old bear.
That's going to be a 26-minute
featurette,
and it's quite delightful. The Milne characters come to life just as they were drawn on the pages of the book.
There's another picture that we've written several songs for, The Jungle Book, based on Kipling's stories. It's quite an interesting thing.
It's pretty way out. We've done it for comedy. And
this is the sequence where the monkeys take Mowgli, the boy, and capture him, and they're trying to impress him with their desires in life.
And the monkey, the king of the apes, is played by Louis Prima, and he sings this to the boy. Now I'm the king of the swingers, the jungle VIP. I've reached the top and had to stop, and that's what's bothering me. I want to be a man cub, and stroll right into town and be just like the other men. I'm tired of monkeying around. Oh, ooby-doo, I want to be like you, ooh-ooh. I want to walk like you, talk like you, too, ooh-ooh. You'll see it's true, ooh-ooh. An ape like me, ee-ee. Can I learn to be you, ooh-ooh, and too, ooh-ooh. An ape like me, can learn to be human too.
The Sherman Brothers at work in their studio in Hollywood. And now we hear again from Walt Disney himself, who talks about some of the films we've been seeing and are about to see in this country.
Well, The Three Lives of Thomasina, that's a Paul Gallico story about this Scottish cat, and most of it takes place in this little town up near, I photographed it right outside of Edinburgh for a lot of the location scenes, and the main part of the picture was done in London. And Greyfriars Bobby, I don't know whether that story is as well known down there as it is, it's been quite a success here in this country. And England, it's the story of a little dog, the faithful little dog, who would not leave his master's grave, and he was buried in Greyfriars Kirkyard. Again, it's Edinburgh. I'm the leading Scottish film producer. I don't know whether you know that. I've made more films in Scotland than any other producer, and I'm Irish by descent. Then we have one called Sammy the Way Out Seal that I think the families will be a great family picture. It's about two boys, two brothers who find a wounded seal on the beach, and they sort of sneak it into their home to take care of the seal. They bring it in, and nobody knows they have this seal in their in their home. And, of course, the seal gets into a lot of mischief and things, and there's a lot of fun, but they do help the seal to... he's wounded, so they do help the seal to come back and regain his health, and then he turns loose again finally, and he goes out in the ocean and meets a nice, beautiful little female seal for the ending. The darn cat, have you heard of the darn cat?
Oh, yes. We believe that that's breaking records left, right, and center in the States and also in England.
Well,
can you tell us something more about it?
Well, the darn cat is the story. It's laid here in, laid in California. About, there was a bank robbery and the kidnapping of a lady teller. And this cat prowls every night. And he comes home one night with a lady's wristwatch around his neck instead of his collar. Well, this leads to tie up with this kidnapping of this woman teller. And in order for them to find where these bank robbers are hiding out, they have to tail this cat every night. The FBI has to follow this cat as it prowls in order to try to find out where he got that wristwatch. So all the comedy springs around the FBI and the whole neighborhood being concerned with where the cat got the wristwatch. And they finally get the robbers in the end.
Every nook and cranny and garbage can he inspects so thoroughly, yeah. When he's on his rounds, nothing's out of bounds to his curiosity. He can't smile and purr at a pretty herd till she don't know where she's at. No, who's like a Geiger? Oh, what a tagger! A bat dog cat. He's a sly old codger, an artful dodger, a scrounger unsurpassed, a ball of fire, a nine live wire who just can't be outclassed. Yeah, this midnight rover, he lives in clover. It's an art he's got down pat. I never was a greater smooth operator. A bat dog cat. The tale I tell. That's T-A-L-E, not T-A-I-L. I'm talking about the tale of that darn cat.
That's Don Cat, who will soon be making himself known to us, but we very much doubt whether he's ever made the acquaintance of Mickey Mouse, who was considerably before his time. 1928, in fact, when we first saw Mickey Mouse in Steamboat Willie. Leslie Stane asked Walt Disney how the techniques of animation have changed since those days.
Well, for the better, I think. In those days, we didn't have very much money, and we had to find a very simple way to do these drawings so that we could get them out. I think the first Mickey Mouse was probably made for under $2,000. And now it's impossible for me to make one of these short subjects under $150,000. That's what's happened in those days. And that's what happens when you start improving the technique.
And, of course, here's the million-dollar question coming up. How, sir, do you actually make a cartoon, if you can explain that in a few words?
Well, we draw it.
Yes, but the movement... do you perhaps first dress up a cast, let's say, in Snow White, in particular clothing, and do you copy that clothing?
We don't copy. It's the wrong word. We don't copy. If we copied, it just we wouldn't be what we turn out. When we get into things like Snow White and these feature cartoons where you have the human anatomy to contend with, we do use models, and we do put them in the wardrobe and things, and we do photograph them, but it's more to set a guide. It's like any artist using a model, except we're using them in motion. Now, it's awful hard to visualize the graceful maneuvers of the female figure, you know. For my artists, we used to sit down there and they would go through the actions and look at themselves in a mirror, you see. And I said, I've got to get away from that because they were poor actors, you see. Now, by having the model and everything, she will go through the gestures and things, but we don't copy, we don't trace. That is more an inspiration. Then we take our own latitude from that. But it is sort of a thing that stimulates the imagination of the artist. And it's given us a chance to improve animation by having a... Depends on who you get to pantomime. Now, they will give us... You bring in the right person to do the pantomime. It can be like giving you an idea of what this character ought to do, too, you see? Because we got a problem starting with a blank piece of paper. And then we've got to take these with our pencil. We've got to make them have personality and life and proper movement. Well, that's an awful lot for you to sit down in the room and think about and try to work out, you know? So that's why we do that.
Are you developing any new filmmaking techniques?
Well, we're improving. All our film techniques have been constantly improving. With Mary Poppins, we came up with a whole new technique, the one where we put the humans in with the cartoons. Now, that's a new way of doing that. We brought we worked with the J. Arthur Rank organization in England, and they developed it to a point. We brought it over here, and we have developed it to a point where I think we've improved quite a bit on what Rank had. And we're using that now for combination, for taking human actors even and putting them. I could do a scene right in my studio here that would have South Africa as the background. And I never go to South Africa with my cast, but I'd send a camera crew over and get all the backgrounds. But I put my people right there. It's possible to do that.
Well, what about your coming to South Africa and getting close to our Kruger National Park?
Well, I've been very close to Kruger National Park because I've had to sit here and edit films that I shot there. But everybody else has the fun of going places. I have to run this studio.
Is there any possibility of ever seeing you out there, do you think?
Well, I hope so, because, I've lived through... I did that film, The African Lion, where I had my crew there for 2 years, and I think it's one of the best, if I do say so myself, one of the best coverages of the story of the animals and the African plains, or whatever you call them. What do you call the plains there, where they graze and everything?
The felt.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if ever you can make it, South Africa will certainly give you a great welcome.
Yeah, I look forward to it. I bring my bowling balls. I hear they bowl.
Oh, yes.
I bowl on the green here, you know. I belong to Beverly Hills Club.
Yes.
You know?
Well, we've got a lot of great...
Getting in training for my old age, you know, but I do say so myself. It's a great game. I prefer it over golf.
Good. Now, to what, apart from hard work, do you ascribe your success?
Oh, I don't know, to several things. I think I've been interested in it ever since, way back. I went to art school when I was 14. 14 years old. Before that, I was always drawing. And then out of the fact that I wanted to be a newspaper cartoonist and things, I happened to fortunately get into this film business. I was 18 years old when I started in this business. I've been in this business 45 years. 46.
Well, you certainly built a tremendous monument.
Wow, that was an incredible clip. Just to hear Walt clarify that reporter as opposed to what the animation process is, and also hearing about Walt's other sport other than polo, bowling. Well, that's it for this week, guys. Show number 120. Thanks for listening. If you want to get in touch with the show, give us an email at thedisneynerds@yahoo.com. Also, check out our Facebook pages, the Disney Nerds Podcast page and the Disney Nerds Group. Thanks for listening this week, guys. And for Jimmy, Sam, and Jen, this is Ed. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye. Kungaloosh and Quaharini.
If you would like to join our jamboree. There's a simple rule that's compulsory. Mortals pay a token fee. Rest in peace.